Welcome to Glencoe's Business and Personal Law podcast series. You're listening to It's the Law.
Hello, and welcome to It's the Law. I'm Seth Abrams. Today's show is devoted to helping you understand some of the basics of our judicial system. Of course, the law is very complex, but we thought it would be nice to give you, the listeners, an opportunity to call or email in some of your questions regarding the basics. Law 101. Joining us today to answer your questions and quandaries is an illustrious panel. First, law professor Rose Deloitte, Los Angeles entertainment attorney Blake Drummond, and criminal defense attorney Isabel Jimenez. Welcome, and thank you all for being here.
My
thank
pleasure.
You.
It's good to have you.
Thanks.
Before we start taking questions from listeners, I'd like to ask all of you to speak to our listeners about why a solid knowledge and understanding of business and personal law is important to their futures. Keep in mind, of course, that our listeners are smart, eager young people making big decisions about their lives and who hopefully have had very little practical experience in this area. Ms. Deloitte, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, as an educator, I am naturally an advocate for learning. And I suppose that what I would say to young people is that while the law is indeed a very complicated system, the more you know about it and the more you educate yourself about how it works, the less likely you are to find yourself on the wrong side of it someday.
And assuming we're talking mostly about those who aren't planning careers in law, where this concept is a given, what young people have to remember is the old adage, ignorance of the law is no defense. Even if you don't know you're breaking the law or are in some way disregarding the law, whether criminally or civilly, you are still responsible for paying the penalty, whatever that may be. Fines, community service, or time behind bars.
How often does that really happen? I mean, somebody not knowing whether or not something is lawful or not.
Oh, much more than you realize. We aren't talking about big ticket crimes. If you're somebody who doesn't know robbing a bank is against the law, well, I would suggest you're either a very bad liar or crazy. What Blake means is that if you, say, put a new roof on your garage and don't know you need a building permit to do that, well, then you have nobody else to blame but yourself when you're forced, at your own expense, by the city building inspector to remove it or pay a huge fine.
Even if you had intentionally decided not to seek a permit and knew you were breaking the law, the penalty would be just as severe. So in other words, whether you're breaking the law knowingly or unknowingly, the result is the same. And so is the penalty.
Right. And let's not forget that laws vary from state to state and city to city. You might be able to put that new roof on your garage without a permit in Fresno, but in Sacramento, you better have a permit or you may be in big trouble with the city.
So you would all agree that educating yourself about the law is the best way to avoid problems with it, and the more young people know about the law, the better equipped they are for life.
Absolutely. Knowledge is power. But when it comes to criminal activity, most of us know what's legal and what's illegal instinctively because criminal laws are designed around laws of ethical standards. We don't need a law to tell us it's not right to steal, but we do need a law that protects us from people who, unfortunately, steal anyway.
I guess if you have to ask yourself the question, is this legal, chances are it's not. Sort of like the smell test.
That's oversimplifying. Sometimes a business deal that smells fine is fraught with problems and illegalities, and that's why lawyers are so important. We can sniff out, if you will, and identify the problems.
Let's go to our first caller, Lauren in Baltimore. Go ahead, you're on It's the Law.
Hi. What do they mean when they say discovery? I always hear that term on legal dramas and sometimes when I watch court TV, but I don't really understand what it means.
Discovery is the process by which all the facts and evidence are presented to the court before a trial. The court will then determine what is admissible at trial. Methods of discovery would include things like depositions, mental evaluations, requests for certain documents, physical evidence, photographs, that kind of stuff.
Okay, moving on to Jack from Omaha. Jack sent an email. Why do we need pretrial hearings? Why not just start the trial? Seems like a waste of time with the courts backed up the way they are. Blake, you want to take this one?
Well, you can often settle a case in a pretrial hearing and avoid a trial altogether, which is clearly a good thing and can save lots of court time. Anything that can decrease the court's workload is beneficial to everybody. But pretrial hearings are essential. What a pretrial hearing also does is lay out the rules and the plan for trial. Even things like scheduling, so that the trial runs as smoothly as it can. It's like a team meeting in the locker room before a game, except both teams are there.
Good analogy. Okay, I have an email from Belinda in Houston. Belinda writes, why is it necessary that each state have its own constitution? Good question. Why can't we all just live by the rules of the United States Constitution? Rose?
You're right, Seth. That is a very good question. In many ways, we do all live under the rules of the U.S. Constitution, because laws made at the state level can often be overturned at the federal level by the Supreme Court. But the U.S. Constitution does state very clearly that powers not specifically granted to the federal government are reserved for the states. That said, the federal court system can, in many instances, take jurisdiction over cases when it deems it appropriate.
Can you please define jurisdiction for us?
Sure. Simply put, jurisdiction is a court's power to hear a case and rule on it.
And how do the courts get that power?
Back to that famous document, Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution, which is called the Supremacy Clause, states that the U.S. Constitution and the laws of the United States are the highest laws of the country. No judicial body or branch of government can trump the Supreme Court.
Okay, let's take a call from Chloe in Miami, Florida. Chloe, go ahead. You're on It's the Law.
Can somebody please explain to me what a grand jury is?
I was a prosecutor with the district attorney's office before I became a defense attorney. Our office, the DA's office, would ask that a panel or jury hear the evidence the DA's office had against a potential defendant. That is, somebody we wanted to charge with a crime. The prosecuting attorney is essentially asking this jury to allow the state to go to trial. Grand juries, by the way, conduct their hearings in private. They are not deciding guilt or innocence, but rather whether or not they believe there is a strong possibility that a crime has been committed. If they do agree with the prosecutor, then they will hand down what's called an indictment. If no indictment is handed down, then there's no trial.
Then what happens? I mean, if there's an indictment.
Well, then an arraignment is the next step.
And how is that different from a pretrial hearing?
Well, an arraignment will determine whether or not there will even be a trial. If a defendant pleads guilty, then there's no need for a trial, and the judge may impose a sentence immediately. If, however, a defendant pleads not guilty, then the case goes to trial. And a pretrial hearing is just what it implies. The trial is going to happen unless they come to a settlement in a civil trial or the defendant agrees to a plea bargain in a criminal trial. But typically, those offers have already been presented and rejected by the time a pretrial hearing takes place.
Okay. We need to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Glencoe's Business and Personal Law podcast series.
We're back with our panel of law experts talking about some of the basics of the law, and we're taking your calls and emails. We have time for just a couple more questions, so let's go to John in St. Louis. Go ahead, you're on It's the Law.
Hello, I have a question for the panel. Can you talk a little more about how the federal court system is set up? I'm not sure I understand the difference between a U.S. District Court and a U.S. Court of Appeals.
John, the federal courts are set up on three levels. The first level is the U.S. District Courts. And that's where most federal cases begin. Each state has at least one district court, and many have more than that. The second level is the U.S. Court of Appeals, which consists of 13 different courts in 13 different judicial districts around the country. Courts of appeal are also called intermediate courts. They hear appeals from the lower courts, and they have the authority to overturn the verdicts or rulings of those lower courts. A U.S. Court of Appeals has three judges. There are no witnesses, no evidence is presented. They are simply arguing the law and whether the lower court applied the law properly. Now, a decision by an appeals court can be overturned by the third level in the federal court system, and that is the U.S. Supreme Court. That's the law of the land. As somebody said earlier, nobody trumps the U.S. Supreme Court.
We have a call from Danielle in Tacoma. You have a question?
Hi. I know that sometimes people can work out their differences without going to court, but I'm confused about the difference between arbitration and mediation.
Rose?
Well, when two parties agree to meet with a mediator to help them resolve their differences, then each party maintains their bargaining power. The mediator can guide them and help them work things out, but does not have the final say. In arbitration, the parties relinquish their control, their power, and hand it over to an arbitrator. The arbitrator, who is hired and paid for his or her services, then hands down a decision that both parties are legally bound to, almost like a judge. The advantage to this approach is that an arbitrator is seeing a case objectively and without preference and is more likely to make an unbiased and fair decision.
ADRs, alternate dispute resolutions, are becoming more and more popular as an alternative to civil lawsuits and can save thousands of dollars in legal fees, court costs, and, of course, court time.
But that doesn't mean we still don't need a lot of good attorneys.
Nice. Right.
Okay, we're out of time. This has been terrific. Very informative. Thank you for being here. And thank you for listening. And be sure to join us next time on It's the Law.
You've been listening to Glencoe's Business and Personal Law podcast series.